From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Namdi. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst and contributing writer for Washington City Paper. Tom Sherwood, welcome.
Hello, everyone.
Later in the broadcast, we'll be talking with Don Beyer. He's a member of the U.S. House of Representatives representing Virginia's 8th District, who has self-quarantined. Joining us in studio now is Carl Racine. He is the Attorney General for the District of Columbia. General Racine, thank you for joining.
Thank you very much, Kojo. Tom.
And the news, Tom Sherwood, all has to do with the coronavirus, several aspects of it. I'd like to begin with Maryland officials apparently deciding or thinking about having the election by mail in response to the coronavirus outbreak. How would that work?
Well, let's hope it would be nothing like the Iowa caucuses. You know, they changed their system in January, and then by February it was a mess. But, you know, this is a very serious matter for the Maryland Board of Elections. State Senate President Bill Ferguson says the legislators are looking at trying to see if they need to do it. Attorney General Brian Frost says that there's no need for legislation, but the logistics of getting everyone to vote by mail could just be overpowering. The election, the primaries in Maryland are April 28th. That's not very far away. But there's a real problem if you have people at the – everyone who's gone to an election site, a precinct, knows they're mostly elderly people there who staff those precincts. There are all kinds of issues with the virus, so they're seriously looking at it. There's been no decision, but people are saying, the mayor of Baltimore and others have said, if you're going to make this decision, let's make it quicker and then start planning for it.
And speaking of making decisions, a decision has been made to close D.C. public schools. Tell us about that.
Mayor Muriel Bowser is holding a news conference at this hour. She'd said this morning that after some consideration that she would be closing D.C. public schools for 2 weeks. She recognizes, as every elected official does, that closing schools creates its own havoc for working parents and trying to find child care. And there are many students in the D.C. public school system, I think the number might be 70%, who qualify for subsidized breakfast and lunch matters. And so the city is going to open next week. 11 sites, schools around the city where parents will be able to take their children for food if they need to.
And Maryland public schools will also be closed.
Maryland public schools are closing.
In Virginia, Governor Northam says he let counties decide to do
that. Fairfax has decided.
On a county-by-county basis.
This is, you know, when everyone is saying, well, you should avoid gatherings of 250 or 500 people, what more is there than a school with students gathering in an auditorium or in a cafeteria? So it's very difficult to they call it distant learning or some bureaucratic phrase like that. It's hard to keep the children up to speed, but the first thing is to keep them safe.
Let's talk D.C. politics for a minute here because
well, I've got some.
The Washington Post reports that former Ward 2 council member Jack Evans more than likely qualifies for public campaign money in his comeback bid. This is something that Jack never needed in the past because he was known as the most prolific fundraiser in the city.
He has always been following of the traditional fundraising. But in this case, you know, after he resigned from the council and then he decided fairly quickly he would seek a seat again, he said, I'll do public financing. He initially opposed public financing in the council, but then he voted for it when it passed the council. And some people thought he shouldn't be allowed to use public financing. But, you know, if you have a public financing law and you're legally allowed, then you should just do it and let the voters decide what they think about him running. So, yes, he did turn in enough signatures. There's a set number you have to get in the ward itself and in the city, and he's gotten those. And so unless there's something really problem with them, 10 days it takes for the Board of Elections to approve them all, he should be on the ballot June 2nd and again on June 16th for the special election.
And on that June 2nd ballot, there are another, what, seven people running?
Yes, you know, I did the forum last week. There are seven other candidates, and they're all running, and most of them are getting the public financing.
I noticed that in other council races, Ward 4 Councilmember Brandon Todd, who's raised more than anybody else so far, in this primary, $450,000, which is a lot of money for a ward council race.
Well, I believe that may be a record. I think Jack Evans may have held the record before then. You know, Brandon Todd is facing, we might get into that a little more in a moment.
Looking forward to talking about that.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, we're looking forward to talking with our guests.
But you know, it does take campaigns. You have to do mailings. You have to have some, you have to have some staff. You have to maybe do some polling.
Put me in, coach.
But, you know, Brandon Todd is in a fight to get for reelection.
Bill Carl Racine says put him in, but in a way he is already in, even though he's not actually on the ballot, Tom Sherwood. It seems like a lot of people affiliated with the Attorney General are running, and there is talk in town that the Attorney General seems to be building himself a political power base.
Well, you know, maybe since he's here, the first thing we should ask him is that he's already this week filed, I've got the filing paper right here, he's filed to run for re-election as Attorney General, although I thought he had said he'd only served two terms in that job. But more immediately, in the current election cycle, he's supporting four and a half, candidates for the D.C. Council. So maybe we should ask him, what's he up to?
Thank you very much for inviting me to come here.
Oh, welcome, by the way.
Well, thank you. And I'm thrilled to be here. Let's get to it. First, I did file yesterday and have a couple more forms to complete my intention to run for Attorney General for a third term. I cannot tell you how excited I am about having that clarity and how excited I am about talking about some of the work, additional work, and new sections that we're going to breathe life into in this city and bring the kind of change that actually residents have been clamoring for.
That sounds like a campaign speech. Why did you make the decision? You know, people talked about you running for mayor. You had supported Kamala Harris. People had touted you as maybe the Attorney General. Are you going to be satisfied with another four-year term as Attorney General should you win that?
Well, you know, I've got about 2.5 more years in my current term. And if I were to win in 2022, and of course, anything is possible, then that would give me 6.5 years. And my thinking is this. You talked about Jack Evans. We talk about public corruption. You talk about the way in which business is done in the District of Columbia with the same old lobbyists, convincing, frankly, a lot of the same old council members to pass legislation and do other things that benefit business at the detriment of individuals in the District of Columbia, particularly vulnerable communities. So, yeah, I'm running really hard against the status quo on that point, and I want to have an impact on the status quo on that point. I'm happy to talk about Ward 2. Brooke Pinto is running for Ward 2. Yes, indeed.
She's one of the eight candidates.
She's the best candidate running for Ward 2. And I say that because she's the only candidate who actually has legislative experience. She worked in our office for 2 years.
No, Jack Evans has legislative experience.
Well, Jack Evans is corrupt. He's lacks integrity. And I don't want to hammer him because I believe in the presumption.
You just did.
Well, I believe in the presumption of innocence. I was on your show when I said that about Jack. And I got to tell you, I had a conversation with Jack after that show, and he said, thank you. And Jack is innocent until proven guilty, but he should not be a candidate for this race. It's his right, and he's going to get beat, and he's going to be defeated by a person with integrity and experience in the legislative area, and that's Brooke Pinto.
Yeah, she worked. Can we just clear this up? Because there are several candidates who will be demanding maybe equal time. I'm going to give it to them now. You're supporting Brooke Pinto because she had worked with you.
No,
you
like, nope.
You know, well, and you got to know her, and she did good work for
that's
you.
That's correct.
And then she got in. But what is it that you're supporting several people? See, some people have said you're trying to be a kingmaker.
No.
And some of these folks, I mean, you're kind of supporting someone who's running against Vince Gray, although you're close to Vince Gray, I believe. And these are people who will decide your budget and what you can do and not do on the council. You're setting up quite the war. We saw Mayor Bowser do this in 2018 with Alyssa Silverman. You supported Alyssa Silverman. I mean, is it unusual for the Attorney General to get so deeply involved in city politics?
Well, I'm not going to mind my own business when I see things that need change. I'm sorry.
The council
about that.
Needs to be overhauled. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying the council needs to be overhauled. I am saying that in Ward 2, Brooke Pinto should be elected. I'm saying in Ward 4, notwithstanding the fact Brandon Todd has a boatload of money, you can bet my bottom dollar he is going to lose in that race. People want an independent council member, somebody who actually considers the issues, somebody who puts forward real legislation. And candidly,
who would that be?
Obviously, that's Janice Lewis, who worked at the Office of Attorney General.
Janice Lewis, George,
that's right.
Is her full name. Yeah.
Well, you know what?
Where is she on the ballot?
I love her sign. Just remember Janice.
Okay. Well, again, what about you? This is the most political you have been. You ran for Attorney General saying you wanted to take control of that office. I think people in general believe you have. You've had some epic battles with the mayor over your budget. And you're not particular, and of course, Mayor Bowser is supporting Brandon Todd in Ward 4. So is this a larger battle than just who is the Ward 4 council person?
I don't think it's a larger battle in the sense that I'm
you're running, battling the mayor, seems.
Well, I think that we probably have two different candidates. And to the extent,
yes, you do.
Okay, and to the extent that we disagree, then, you know, we should debate that. I'm happy to have a debate with Mayor Bowser about who is the best candidate for Ward 4, because it's not close. Ward 4 deserves a council member who thinks independently, who acts for the people, not the big money interest.
Have you told Brandon Todd this directly?
He knows I'm not supporting him.
What other wards are you supporting candidates in?
Let me just note something about Brandon Todd, because civil rights, I think, is an issue that the entire city has a consensus around. We have drafted a bill at the Office of Attorney General, and it's been sitting on Brandon Todd's desk now for over 13 months. What we want to do with the civil rights bill is have expanded authority so that our office can do, frankly, what other agencies in the District of Columbia are not empowered to do, and that is to bring lawsuits where folks have been discriminated against. I note, as you know, we have brought civil rights lawsuits recently that have yielded the city millions of dollars, and forget the money. What's most important is the message. Do not discriminate against poor people who have a subsidy and want to give you that subsidy, Mr. Landlord. Why is Brandon Todd not passing the civil rights bill that has been on his desk for 13 months? Maybe had he passed it before, I wouldn't be so enthusiastic.
Five people running.
You've politicized your office.
Five people running.
That's what critics would tell you.
Five people running, including two current council members, have ties to your office. Political consultant Chuck Thies said that you're quoting here, you're building a political machine, are you?
You know, and I think that our city's history allows for sort of simple conclusions like that. I don't have a fresh pack. I don't have a color. I don't have a mascot.
So for those who don't know, that's a reference to Mayor Bowser's fresh pack and her green color, the green team. I'm going to interpret this over here while you talk.
Well, thank you very much. Here's what we have at the Office of Attorney General. We have an office of public interest-focused individuals who want to use the law as a tool to help vulnerable people. There should be no surprise why we attract really committed people who want to do more, including running for office.
Well, let's talk about what your office actually does. D.C. just won a lawsuit against an outdoor advertising agency that your office filed in 2016. Can you tell us what exactly that firm was doing and why it violated city code?
Sure. To make a long story short, Digimedia, then it changed its name to Luminate, came into this city really erect these large LED monitors on buildings. Problem with Digi is that it didn't ask to do it. So it violated the DC building code by erecting these big monitors without any review. And what's more, DCRA, the DC agency responsible for this, put up stop order notices. That means don't do this anymore. Guess what? Digi plowed right through those stop orders.
Ignored everybody, every reasonable.
Everybody, everything, and that's why we filed suit. After we filed suit, Digi, of course, got its lobbyist going, David Wilmot, and they tried to kill our lawsuit. Jack Evans, that's right, Ward 2 candidate Jack Evans, drafted legislation that would have killed our lawsuit. And guess what happened? Enough council members stood up and said, no, we almost lost. And I've got a question about those council members, including my friends, who were going to go ahead and give Jack what he wanted. Now, we later found out, okay, in the course of discovery and in course of news gathering, big shout out for two reporters. Jeff Anderson gets a lot of heat in this town, but Jeff Anderson doggedly pursued Jack Evans. Steve Thompson, a new reporter at the Post, doggedly pursued Jack Evans. What'd they find out? My goodness gracious. Digimedia gave Jack Evans checks totaling $100,000. Jack, for some reason, returned those checks. Then again, Digimedia gave Jack stock certificates, 200,000 shares. Jack returned those.
And that's a very big thing, and that he's paid a political price for it. Those 200,000 shares in that company turned out to be not worth much, but the fact is he got the shares.
Well, here's the deal on the value of those shares, because you're right. The market hadn't determined the value, but I can tell you what. The owner of the company, Mr. McCourt, he got over $60 million from investors on the basis of having, in his mind, permission in D.C. to put up these signs.
And he's also in prison now in California.
He pled guilty, and as he should, and he's in jail.
Got to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picco and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst and contributing writer for Washington City Paper. Later in the broadcast, we'll be talking with Don Beyer. He's a member of the U.S. House of Representatives representing Virginia's 8th District, who has self-quarantined. Here's Keith in Shepherd Park. Keith, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Hi, Mr. Attorney General. I'm not sure which ward you live in. I'm a long-term Ward 4 resident, and Councilmember Todd, or Brandon, as everyone in the neighborhood and throughout the ward calls him, is the most responsive, the most attentive, the most caring and on the ball representative that we could possibly ever have. That is not just my opinion, but every neighbor, everybody that I do business with in the ward, if there's a pothole, if there's a senior in trouble, if there's a kid having issues with DCPS, Brandon, again,
before Brandon Todd became a council member, he did constituent services for the then Ward 4 council member Muriel Bowser and stood out. And what you seem to be saying is that he is still good at constituent service. I don't think that's the basis on which the attorney general is attacking him. But obviously, Carl Racine can speak for himself.
Hey, Kevin, I really appreciate, you know, your comment. And I certainly respect council member Todd in the context of his constituent service work. He knows what he's doing in that regard. My comments as to Brandon Todd, they're not personal, and I'm sorry if they come off as attacks. I don't mean it that way. What I mean is that Janice Lewis is going to be an independent council member who thinks about the issues herself. My guess is that she's going to, in time, deliver constituent services that rival that of Brandon Todd. And my point is this. Think about the issues of the day in D.C. When is the last time Councilmember Todd has presented legislation on a matter of import to the city, and why is he sitting on civil rights legislation that would protect vulnerable D.C. residents?
If you went by, and again, I'm not going to be the alternate voice for the council people that you're opposing or the candidates you're supporting, but you know, there's lots of legislation, important legislation, that either doesn't get passed or sits around for a long time. There's legislation that's passed with this phony subject to appropriations, which means you'll get credit for passing a bill, but you won't put any money behind it. You know the legislative quagmire that's in any legislature, not just the D.C. Council. But it did seem somewhat personal. Or is it just your passion that you want change on the D.C. Council that we're hearing, not animosity towards the members?
I have no animosity towards any member of the City Council. I also believe that reasonable people can disagree. And that's what elections are for. I am simply stepping out and making it very clear that I believe Janice Lewis is the best candidate in Ward 4, because Janice Lewis works extremely hard.
Okay, but are you endorsing any candidate that didn't work for you?
That remains to be seen.
But not yet.
Not yet. My guess is that there'll be a candidate who enters the at-large race who hasn't entered, that who I probably will consider endorsing.
Speaking of endorsements, you had endorsed Kamala Harris for president.
Kamala.
She's Kamala Harris.
So I got an email from somebody saying I mispronounced it earlier. Kamala.
Okay. who are you now supporting?
You know, look, I'm with the vice president, Joe Biden. I respect Bernie Sanders. I mean, my goodness, has he created an incredible movement? I think it's important to understand why the young people are enamored and spirited by President candidate Sanders. But I think that Joe Biden is the one who can win the White House.
Let's do a little bit more politics real quick. Would you go – you were thought to be possibly the attorney general for Kamala Harris if she got to be president. Would you leave your elected office to go work for a new president, President Biden? Will you run for mayor? Or are you foreclosing running for mayor in 2022?
I'm not foreclosing going into the federal administration. If there's a job that is an important job that could advance the United States, particularly on issues around immigration, I'd be very, very interested in that. With respect to the mayor position, I filed to run again for attorney general. Circumstances can change, and it may be that if those circumstances come to be, I would reflect and make another decision.
And decide to run for mayor instead. That's entirely possible. But
I think that's news.
Fennett Naropil reported that in the Washington Post.
Yeah, but who is that?
I never heard of him. Mayor Bowser declared a state of emergency this week in response to the coronavirus. Your office also issued a consumer alert about what people in D.C. should be aware of during this public health emergency. Let's start with paid sick leave, something that's top of the agenda for many D.C. workers. What do workers need to know?
Workers need to know that there's paid sick leave in the District of Columbia, that they have their rights, and should they feel, obviously, that they're sick, then the Paid Sick Leave Act allows workers to take the time necessary to get themselves well and still receive payment. We're happy to help walk anybody through that, but it's important that when the city has enacted laws for the benefit of people who get sick, that they know their rights exist.
And
could the Attorney General in Maryland, I think Virginia too, and maybe you haven't seen, there are concerns that the virus also is creating scams. People, what have you warned consumers, because you have an Office of Consumer Protection, what do you warn people as they are fearful for their family and themselves to be on alert for the scammers who will try to make money off of it?
Sadly, even in crisis, scammers look to separate people from their money. The scammers will promise remedies, cures, and other relief that simply doesn't square with the scientific facts.
And a lot of this comes through social media, too.
Social media is out there. We're monitoring that very closely. We're working with the attorneys general throughout the country in monitoring these false advertisements. I think it's really important to also know that because Mayor Bowser went ahead and declared an emergency, the city's anti-gouging law goes into effect.
Talk about that. Yep.
And what that means is that with respect to goods and services, purveyors or merchants, you know, cannot seek to unfairly gouge folks. There are limits as to the price increase. Anybody have a question about that, please feel free to call the Office of Attorney General, 202-442-9828.
Got a couple of people with questions on the phone, but before I get to them, there's a bill introduced by D.C. Council Chairman Phil Mendelson that would offer quarantined workers pay and during this emergency, and evictions would be halted. Would you favor that?
I'm entirely supportive of the chairman's emergency legislation. I think in characteristic style, it is extremely thoughtful, and it represents D.C. values by looking out for people who may need a little bit of help now.
But it's my understanding that D.C.'s paid sick leave policy applies to some but not all employees. Who's excluded?
On that point, I can't really answer that question now, but I would ask folks to simply give us a call, and we'll answer it more fully when you call.
Here is Claire in Washington, D.C. Claire, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I would like some help in finding a senior or a lawyer that works with seniors, because I received a notice of correct or vacate on the 11th, and the notice is March one in my residence where I've lived for 53 years. And right now I don't have an attorney. And everything seems to be shut down, and I can't get any help. I don't know where to turn. Is there a possibility that can just give me some help in finding?
Yes. Don't look any further. Do me a favor. You can call me at 202-352-7751, and I assure you that I will help you.
Say that number again.
202-352-7751. And what is your name, ma'am?
I've given the name Claire, but I will correct that.
Okay. When you call his office, you can give him your correct name and said you're the person who called us, Claire.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you very much for your question, for your call. A lot of workplaces are now moving toward teleworking for most of them employees. What is your office doing?
You know, I'm so proud of my team at the Office of Attorney General, and that means the over 300 lawyers that we have and the over 300 professional staff. So today is the first day of our move to telecommuting. So today, about 30 to 35% of our workers are not in the office and instead are telecommuting. On Monday, we'll be up to 60 to 65%. And on Tuesday, the goal is, and I think we're going to achieve that, 100% will be working outside of the Office of Attorney General. It's important for the public to know that essential functions will be represented by human beings in the office. So, for example, going to court, opening the mail, and otherwise interfacing with the clients, we have to have people there to do that because the government is not shut down, period.
You have personal interest in this. You have an elderly mother.
I do.
The mayor the other day mentioned her 81-year-old mother trying to stay at home, not going to the theater, maybe coming to visit the mayor and her daughter, 2-year-old daughter. How personally has this affected what you are doing?
So a lot of people like to talk about differences that I have with Mayor Bowser. And to be sure, I think we're two different leaders, both in style, and we have substantial differences in issues. One thing that we have in common is Mother and Mayor Bowser's fortune, her father is still living. I have so much respect for the way that Marvin Bowser and Mayor Bowser—
That's the mayor's brother.
The mayor's brother. I have so much respect for how they love their parents. And so, and I gotta say, Mayor Bowser's only been nice to my mom, okay? My mom, if she could speak today, she had a big stroke and she's not mobile, nor is she able to speak, she would remind me to be kind and not exuberant when I'm being critical of people. And I violated that rule today, as to Mr. Todd.
But in terms of visiting with her, she's living with you. Is that correct, in your home,
so I have,
in your house?
Yes, that's right. So I have mom care responsibilities lovingly with my mother. However, I share that with my sister who lives in Philadelphia. In light of the crisis, we moved my mom up to Philadelphia because I interact with far more people than my sister does. So I got to tell you, I miss my mom terribly.
Back to politics. Here is Shelley in Washington, D.C. Shelley, your turn.
Hi, Attorney General Racine. I'm just curious. You mentioned that you had a list of other council members that you were supporting. Is Councilman McDuffie on that list?
Councilmember McDuffie is not running in Ward 5, and Councilmember McDuffie is certainly—
There's no election in Ward 5.
That's right. There's no election in Ward 5, and you know, Councilmember McDuffie has been a friend to the Office of Attorney General. He was a Judiciary Chairman our initial year, and he's also been an advocate and proponent of the violence interruption strategies that the office is implementing. I consider Councilmember McDuffie to be a dear friend.
You passed over Vince Gray. What's that?
I'm not passing over Vince Gray at all. I think the world of Vince Gray. I think Vince Gray is one of the most intelligent people in the District of
Columbia.
Are
you supporting his opponent?
For the reasons related to my personal relationship.
How do you say her name?
Vida Rashid, who worked really well at the Office of Attorney General. But for reasons related to my respect and admiration for Vincent Gray, I'm not publicly supporting Ms. Rashid, although I want to tell you, she is a woman of great substance.
So we can interpret in with the flip side that you respect Vince Gray enough not to oppose him, but you don't respect the other one, so you're opposing
not a matter of respect.
Just trying to
honestly, it's really all about who I think is the better candidate.
Got to mention this before you go. The deadline for the Do the Right Thing Challenge is tonight at 11:59 p.m. We mentioned it briefly on Wednesday's show when we discussed how local youth are dealing with gun violence. But is there anything you'd like to say about this essay contest before the deadline?
It is an extraordinary essay contest where kids are asked, middle school children, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, are asked three questions. Number one, have you ever experienced violence? Number two, how did that impact you? And number three, do you have suggestions to adults as to how we might reduce violence? The essays are stunningly brilliant and incredibly painful to read. And we, as adult folks in government and legislatures, with all due respect to my colleagues and me, myself, we don't listen enough to our children. The solutions are right in front of us. They are telling us the truth when they say, we need more school counselors in the school. We need more psychological assistance in the schools. My mom needs help in her workforce development skills so that she can have a consistent job. That's what we have to listen to.
Deadline is tonight at 11:59 p.m. If you haven't written in as yet, now is the time to do it. Carl Racine is the Attorney General for the District of Columbia. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tom and Kojo.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Don Beyer, member of the U.S. House of Representatives representing Virginia's 8th District. He's a Democrat, and at this point, he has decided that he is not coming out in public at this time. He is self-quarantined. I'm Kojo Namdi. Welcome back. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst and a contributing writer for Washington City Paper. Joining us now by phone is Don Beyer. He's a member of the U.S. House of Representatives representing Virginia's 8th District. He is a Democrat who has decided to self-quarantine. Congressman Beyer, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Kojo and Tom.
Tom Sherwood, let's talk a little bit of politics first in the Virginia General Assembly. As the session wound down, Virginia lawmakers decriminalize marijuana and legalize casinos. It is clear that the leadership of the General Assembly has changed hands because these were measures that couldn't get passed before.
This is one of the, I would think, in our lifetimes, one of the most historic gatherings of the Virginia General Assembly, whether you are Republicans who were shut out of leadership in both the House and Senate or not. But the Democrats said they were going to do a lot of things on gun control, abortion, collective bargaining. I'm sure the former Lieutenant Governor of Virginia might want to weigh in on this. But it was an extraordinary session of achieving a great many things. The Republicans say that this legislature has raised the cost of business in the state, that it's going to be bad for the state going forward. But the Democrats are very excited. They went in with a very aggressive anti-gun legislative package, and virtually all of it passed.
Care to weigh in on this, Congressman Beyer?
Well, I agree with Tom. I think this was probably the most productive General Assembly session in our lives. And I know poor Terry McAuliffe, who had a great 4 years as governor, must be very jealous of the House and Senate that Ralph Northam inherited.
Eclipse.
Because they were able to do things that most Virginians, including a lot of Virginia Republicans, wanted to do. But 5 out of 8 of the governor's gun initiatives passed. And probably the most important thing for me, which I know you would both appreciate, is they passed for the second time the constitutional amendment to change, to get rid of gerrymandering in Virginia. And now it'll go to the voters in November.
We're going to get to yourself quarantine, but you know, you were the lieutenant governor from 1990 to 1998. You ran for governor. Jim Gilmore won in that election. But you must, as a Democrat, a national Democrat, state Democrat, you must be very proud of the legislature.
I am really proud, especially because, you know, Democrats in the minority kept saying, well, when we're in the majority, we're going to do the right thing and give up the right to choose our own voters. And there were a couple that pushed back that wanted to keep it the old way. But I was proud that at the end they did the right thing.
Announced on Tuesday that you would be under self-quarantine until Monday. You and your wife had dinner with a friend who later tested positive for COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. First and foremost, how are you feeling?
We're both feeling fine. And our friend didn't just test positive, but he's badly ill, which is, you know, we're really worried about him because he's in his mid-70s. Out of an abundance of caution and at the direction of the Virginia Department of Health, they said, please, you know, make sure you're locked up for 14 days from that dinner so you're not getting anyone else infected.
Well, I happen to know that on June 20th, you'll be 70 years old, so you're right in the demographic of people who should also be worried.
I feel like much younger, but you're right. I do look at the calendar and think. And I just saw today there's 150 members of the U.S. House that are 65 or older. So one of the big things we want to do is make sure that people who have been exposed, who maybe not be symptomatic but could be carrying the disease, are staying away from all the older Americans for whom it could be fatal. I just looked at the chart, 138,000 worldwide cases, 5,100 dead, and another 5,600 seriously ill. You're still talking a 4% fatality rate.
You have 40 times
higher than the fatality rate for the flu.
You've said that, you know, you've acknowledged that you're a person of means, a well-to-do Don Beyer auto, and that you can care for yourself, but that you have said in some other interviews that you also are worried about the people who cannot care for themselves, who don't have sick leave, who don't have means. Have you been talking to the Congress about what it's going to do or not do or what the state's going to do to help those people?
Yes, and before I went home Tuesday night, I was part of meetings with both Majority Leader Steny Hoyer and with our Speaker, Nancy Pelosi. And I believe that she has a deal with the president this morning to do paid sick leave for every American, whether they have sick leave or not, and extending unemployment benefits, trying to do food security. We have a lot of people in Metro D.C., kids who are dependent on our schools for breakfast and lunch. If those, when they close, as they're doing, we've got to make sure that those folks still get fed.
This is the Politics Hour. What did you think of the president's speech the other night? I assume you saw it. The 11-minute monologue.
I always want to be sympathetic, but I thought it was very discouraging. The whole notion, they said it was written by Stephen Miller, and it sure sounded like it. You know, blaming other countries and, I just didn't think that he showed any of the empathy and compassion that our leaders need right now. I certainly know that this administration would want to do the right thing, but they're lagging so far behind. And you know, there was a stat this morning that we have 23 tests per million people, which is one of the worst countries in the world, and yet we know there could be tens of millions of Americans that ultimately get hit. So,
indeed, I heard the governor of New York say today that they're instituting drive-through testing in certain parts of the state. Have you or your wife been tested for the disease?
We have not, Kojo. When we were first told that we were exposed, I called over to the House physician, Dr. Monahan, and after a while, he came back and said that the tests are so short that they're reserving them for people with active symptoms, people that they're actually worried are right now. But in the short run, hopefully by tomorrow or next week, we'll be able to test everyone that's been exposed to somebody who's sick, because the real danger is not the folks that are sick. They're going home or they're going in the hospital. It's the folks that might be carrying the disease but don't have active symptoms, and they could be basically the typhoid Marys carrying coronavirus all through our society.
You obviously can't go to the House floor to vote. So what have you been doing while under self-quarantine, and what has your staff been up to?
Well, we sent our staff home too Wednesday morning and announced today that we're going to keep them home till April 10th. I've been looking at the other, just reading up a storm, and I can't seem to catch up with all the incoming emails and text messages on this issue. We had a town hall meeting by telephone Tuesday night while I was waiting for Dr. Monahan's feedback. All but one of the questions over the course of an hour was about coronavirus. So we're trying to be the most responsible source of information for our constituents we can be. And and Kojo, Tom, probably the most important piece is looking at the four countries most grievously hit, South Korea, Iran, China, and Italy, and looking at the measures they eventually came to after a number of weeks and said, why don't we do that now and get ahead of the curve?
Let me ask you, we asked the Attorney General of the district about his personal impact, and he talked about his mother who's been moved to Philadelphia for that. But on maybe a lighter note, you're there at home in Alexandria, and you're a Virginia gentleman, and I know I'm from the South, Atlanta, and I know that when someone's sick or and can't get out, people bring them things. Have people brought you food? Are you getting goodwill wishes? I mean, I realize you can buy your own food, but how are people in your neighborhood treating you?
Yeah, well, lots of goodwill wishes, and we've had 8 or 9 different offers of, you know, lasagna, soup, pancakes, all kinds of different things to be left on the door. And so far, we've deferred because we have plenty of cereal on hand. But people have been wonderful.
On Wednesday night, we learned that a Hill staffer had tested positive for COVID-19, and now the Capitol is limiting public tours and access. What do you think about those measures, and what else can you tell us about how Congress is working to eliminate the risk for the virus being spread among lawmakers?
And Kojo, that's really important because not only are there 150 over 60 years old, some of the most important people, Nita Lowey, who chairs the Appropriations Committee, Nancy Pelosi, our speaker, the dean of the delegation, Don Young, a Republican from Alaska, all these folks are over 80 and are at very great risk. So I very much approved of shutting down the Capitol. You know, we are blessed because not only do we have sick leave, but almost everyone has the smartphones and the laptops and the good computers that they can work from home. I know my staff, they were still sending me emails at midnight last night. So as we've discovered, many people will work much harder at home than they do in the office.
They feel
guilty. No water cooler conversations.
If the Capitol closes down completely and Congress needs to work remotely, is that something everyone you think is prepared to do? Is there infrastructure in place to do that?
I think largely so. And we're seeing, as I listen to the Attorney General, we were able to send our people home right away. My wonderful chief had been anticipating this about 2 weeks ago, so she got people ready. And we're discovering new forms of technology, things like Zoom, that make it easier to do. We're all becoming Skype experts. The real worry are the folks like, you know, our automobile mechanics or the people working at the fast food restaurants who can't telework. We've got to make sure that we're protecting them. And the most basic message is to make sure that they are covered financially so they don't come to work sick. Bad for them, but also bad for everybody they come in contact with.
Here is Glenda in Alexandria. Glenda, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Well, thank you for taking my call, Kojo. I was just curious. I haven't heard anything about Russia. Have they been affected by the coronavirus? And if so, are they allowed to fly into the States as well? Thank you for taking my call.
Congressman Beyer?
Glenda, good question. To the best of my knowledge, Russia was not covered in the conversation that the president talked the other night. Although I guess that's a little confusing because it is at least the more populous part is part of Europe, and he banned everything from Europe. In looking at the coronavirus dashboard, I don't see any numbers for Russia. So they may, oh, actually, here it is, 34 cases, nobody deceased. So they're much, much smaller than ours right now, and don't seem to be a major factor in the problem.
In the Washington area, the Smithsonian has closed down all its museums. This is the spring tourist season, both for Washington and for Alexandria. Have you got a sense of what's closing in Alexandria or something that's happening there?
Just in the last half hour, I have 2 grandchildren in the public schools there, and I just got the note from my daughter that the public schools would close on starting Monday morning. That the only reason they brought the kids in today was to make sure that they got their, you know, their iPads or their whatever they needed to study next week.
Here is Mark in Silver Spring, Maryland. Mark, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. First, I want to wish safety to your guests and to you and the audience. There is a sense of frustration and confusion. I have not seen one public service announcement. Remember Smokey the Bear? Only you can prevent forest fires. We need clear, trusted, effective communication. Why? Because the 70, 80, 90-year-olds do not surf the internet. They watch TV, listen to the radio, and whatever announcements are going on appear remote from them. Secondly, in terms of Russia, I just saw that there are 10 European countries bordering Russia's border. And Russia is not under embargo. And finally, we are only as strong as our weakest link. We need to support low income. And thank you for your time, and I appreciate your service.
Thank you for your call, Congressman Bayek. Have to respond?
Yeah, well, Mark makes a very good point about the public service announcements, and we will get right on that and reach out to the four local stations to ask them to make sure they have PSAs on for the people who only watch TV. And we'll try to use our congressional platform to get that to the local cable station, or the national cable stations too, Fox News and the MSNBC.
Have you been told anything as a member of Congress that maybe the general public hasn't been told?
I don't think so. I've not heard anything in those meetings that I haven't also read on the internet a couple of minutes later. I was disturbed, I think most of us were, that the Trump administration had decided to hold all the early discussions in secret. We want to be as transparent as we possibly can be.
Now it looks like House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is nearing a deal with the Trump administration on a coronavirus relief package that would help workers and patients affected by the public health crisis. What have you heard about that package, and what are you hoping that that package will include?
Well, I'm hearing good things this morning. I was really disappointed with the Senate the other day, and specifically Senator Lamar Alexander, who said we can't do paid sick leave. It'll be unfair to businesses. Because as I mentioned a few minutes ago, it's essential that if people are sick, that they're out of public and are not forced to go to work just to put food on the table. I am pleased, though, if Speaker Pelosi's made this deal through Secretary Mnuchin with the president's approval, I'm pretty confident the Senate Republicans will go along.
Let me ask you very quickly. It's a very big debate Sunday. Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, one-on-one. Bernie Sanders, many say this is seen as his last chance to change the course of this primary for the Democrats. What do you think Joe Biden has to do to finally put this to rest and get the nomination?
Well, I think, first of all, Joe's comments yesterday, the day before, after the president's speech, I think it was yesterday, really showed him to be presidential, a much greater sense of both gravity and compassion. So I think he needs to show that. But I'm also, I was a Pete Buttigieg guy, now an enthusiastic Biden supporter. I think Florida could be the end of the line for Senator Sanders, because I think Vice President Biden's going to do very well in Florida.
Will he do well enough in a 90-minute debate in terms of his gaffes and his ability, his tendency to get off topic?
Joe is a great talker. And he has been doing the occasional little gaffe every 1%, throughout his long career. And I think we know who he is. He's smart. He's trustworthy.
And I'm afraid
he is an honest, good man. And as someone who often can't finish a sentence, I really appreciate him.
Don Beyer is a member of the U.S. House of Representatives representing Virginia's 8th District. He is self-quarantined. Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Kojo. Thank you, Tom.
Today's show was produced by Sydney Grant, and coming up Monday, Metro's proposed budget cuts would eliminate or consolidate dozens of bus routes. What does this mean for people who count on buses to get around town? Plus, as schools push music programs down on their priority list, arts organizations in D.C. are stepping up to fill the gap. That all starts at Monday at noon. Until then, stay safe. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm Kojo Nnamdi.
The Kojo Nnamdi Show is produced by Julie Deppenbrock, Sydney Grannon, Lauren Marco, Kurt Gardiner, and Victoria Chamberlain. Our managing producer is Mana Kashvi. Our engineer is Mike Kidd. Our intern is Richard Cunningham. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.